Yeah. I also think if you're JP2 and you're like looking at the Swiss guard and you're like, which one am I going to be close to? The guy that's 6'9", the one that's going to take every bullet.
The biggest guy.
Beatitudes!
Oh, yes, Beatitudes. This is an incredible moment to be a Beatitude. That includes all of you watching, even you women out there. You know you love the Beatitudes.
Our Beatitudettes.
That's right.
Yes.
Which by now, we've recorded a few at different conferences. So, and by conferences, I mean one. We went to one.
Yes.
If this is your first experience, the Beatitudes, we're a show for Christian men who are looking to grow in their relationship with the Lord as they walk together in authentic fraternity through the Trinity, the number one fraternity podcast in all the land because it's true fraternity. My name is Jeff Shufflebein, and I am really happy to be here with my co-host, Paul Kolker.
Howdy, howdy.
Howdy, and Nicholas Besner.
What's going on, everybody?
Everything, as always. But you know what? Really special show here, guys.
Yeah.
You know, we got an out-of-town guest who came in town for this show and then booked a bunch of talks at the University of Dallas and other places.
Funny how often that happens.
Institutions, yeah.
It's a good thing you know the guys over there. That,
yeah.
Oh, hey, Jeff, who's
just
coming?
So you know. Yeah. Well, this is, I'm just going to jump right in here and say, I don't have like celebrity heroes. You know, it's not like I'm a Swiftie or whatever, you call, or a Belieber, yeah. Or I don't have any of those things going on. But I do have what I would call like business faith heroes, people that have really been formative in the journey of trying to live the integrated life where faith is not put on the side because we're called to be who we are in our business world, in the virtuous ways in which we lead. And I literally want to just say, I can't believe I'm sitting a couple people away from you. I don't get to sit next to you.
Do you want to switch places? We could have rearranged for today.
Well, we have Andres Widmer with us. Yep. And you're from Switzerland. Am I supposed to say Widmer?
Widmer, like a V.
Widmer.
Yeah, we don't do W's.
Am I saying Andreas wrong then, too?
Andreas.
Andreas.
Yeah.
Widmer.
Andreas. But just call me Andreas.
Yeah, you got it. You know, my last name, I don't even say correctly.
I know. I think of that every time you say it.
Fair enough.
Anyway, who am I to judge?
Yeah, so. You know what? Who am I to judge leads to our first question. Who are you?
So I'm Michelle's husband, first of all. And I'm a huge follower of JP2. He brought me to Christ, and that's center of my life. Aside from that, I'm from Switzerland. I had a career in software. It took me a long time to figure out what my talents are. But eventually I had a career in software, startups. I had three really strong startups that I was a part of. And then went into a bit of business strategy and foundation work, and then now I teach at the Bush School of Business.
If I could have this level of humility, let's go way back.
But that's really it. Yeah.
What did little Andres, who's probably also was probably 6'6 or whatever, how tall are
not
you?
Not so little.
6'8?
6'9. But
you're
6'9. Who's counting, Trent?
You know who's counting? Everybody who knows that this table is the tiniest podcasting table in America is trying to figure out, what are you doing with your legs under there? Like a pretzel?
Let me just tell you something. If I lift my leg, I could lift this whole table.
I believe it.
Okay? We're only an inch away from that.
Yeah, your feet are almost hitting the cameras over there.
And they keep shaking.
No.
No, what was the growing up story for you that put you on your path?
So I'm from Switzerland, and I went into the Swiss military and then found out that I qualified as a Catholic to apply to become a Swiss Guard, which is actually interesting. I did it for all the wrong reasons. Well, these are good reasons. I thought being a bodyguard was about the coolest thing I could possibly do.
Sounds awesome.
Plus, I sucked at everything else. So I'm like,
of elimination.
The first good thing I did that I succeeded at was the military. And when I learned that they would pay me to walk around with a gun and the thing in my ear, I'm like, that's what I'm going to do. Then I found out it's the Pope that I have to protect. I'm like, that's fine. I don't have anything against the Pope. I was not, you know, I grew up in the 70s. I was not into religion, Catholicism. Mm-hmm. I didn't really understand. And lo and behold, they accepted me. If I would have known how hard it was to get in, I would not have had the self-confidence to do it, to apply. But I didn't know anything. God is good. And then I joined there, and you know, the Swiss Guards is a foreign legion, literally a foreign legion. Switzerland is not Catholic, it's Protestant. So there's Swiss Guards were founded in 1506, which pre-Protestant Reformation. And so we have an agreement with them, us Catholic cantons, a couple of them, have an agreement with them that we can go and serve a foreign head of state and come back without going to jail. Because if you do that as an American, you go to jail when you come back.
Yeah.
Right?
Fascinating.
Wow.
And so we get this rule of being able to go there, and we lose our passport, like you do in a foreign legion, like if you're going to the French Foreign Legion. And so we become Vatican citizens during our time as Swiss Guards. The downside with that is they take your passport and you're basically for 2 years, a minimum of 2 years, you're not going anywhere. It's a foreign legion. Like once the door closes behind you, that's it.
Yeah.
As soon as that happened, I'm like, oh, shoot, I made totally the this is much harder than I bargained for. I just want the gun and the earpiece. That's right. That's why I'm here, right? And this was much harder than I thought it was. And I was totally desperate to get out of there, but there was nothing to do. And I'm like accusing myself. And then I met John Paul II, actually, was on a Christmas Eve. And he noticed that I was not in the best spirits. Truth is, I was crying my eyes out the whole evening. I never thought he would come out right where I was, right? But he came out there and he noticed. And he he looked at me and he embraced me and said, look, Andreas, I'm really happy you're here. And he noticed that I was crying and everything, but he didn't put me on the spot. He just said, I tell you what, I'm going to say mass now and I'm going to pray for you. So he went to can you imagine? He went to celebrate midnight mass, which it didn't mean anything to me spiritually at the moment. What it meant for me is here's the guy I'm working for, the boss, and he seems to care, right? He's a nice guy. In retrospect, I'm seeing it was the pivotal switch and moment of my life where a mass was said for me by a faithful priest. Mm-hmm. And it, what he does, what good priests and good Christians do for others is actually to take their burden on and pray for them, right? Mm-hmm. This is one of our privileges. And so he prayed for me because I wouldn't have known how to pray myself. And that was a pivotal moment in my life. After that, I kept, you know, I became a groupie. Like, I loved this guy. And I was so in awe, a full human, a true man who went hiking and skiing and swimming, but also had this intellectual power and vision. That because you're always there. When he talks, I see everything. I hear everything he says. But I'm just like, boy, I want to be what you are.
Yeah. Hmm.
And he would not accept that. And he would turn and point at the cross and said, no, what you want Jesus Christ, not me. And I can, you know, and you can have Jesus, and taught me how to pray. And yeah, that changed my life. Is that what you wanted to know?
Cool person to learn how to pray from.
Yeah. I also think if you're JP2 and you're like looking at the Swiss Guard and you're like, which one am I going to be close to? The guy that's 6'9", the one that's going to take every bullet.
The biggest guy.
I'm telling you, there were some true machines. Like, I kept doing, so you do close combat, and long story, our coach was always saying, I'm only going to teach you how to attack because falling, well, once you fall, it's too late, like, right? Because wow. You're not going to get back up and do something. Like, once you're on the ground, you're of no use. So we do attack and total in. And of course, they give me the sparring partner who was like the chief, like he was the judo champion of Switzerland. And then the local like wrestling sport.
Yeah.
After, I mean, they're like, okay, go. And within 2 seconds, I'm like out of, like he
cuts my, choked you out.
And I'm saying, dude, we're not trying to kill each other here. And so, and there was 110 of us. And I would say there's a good 15 of those that I wouldn't pick a fight with.
Yeah.
Even at 6'9". And I think I fought pretty well. But there's a 10 or 15 of them that I wouldn't pick a fight with.
That says a lot. You're a big man. Talk about with JP2, obviously you're around him all the time, so you get to see his interactions and see the character, right? It's not just a front. It's not just he's in front of people. Did you also get to know him on a personal level outside of like the crowds and the people that are coming to see him?
Yes and no. So I didn't have the relationship with him where I would like sit down, like I sit down with you now and actually have this long conversation. I'm not allowed to talk to him. He's allowed to talk to me. And when he's talking to me, I'm allowed to reply. That's the extent to which I interacted with him normally. And he would often, he would often not just walk by, but say, "Hey, Andreas, how are you?" And imagine that. Like, he literally walks by and say, "Hey, Andreas," and then introduce me to some of the people that he was with. I didn't say, "This is the tallest dude we have here." And sometimes he would like say, "Okay, we got to take a picture of this." Like the primate of Poland, Cardinal Glemp, was a friend of his and of course visited on a regular basis. And let's say he was height challenged. JP2 thought it was the funniest thing.
Could have y'all stand.
And of course Glemp had his camera with him because he's in Rome visiting and everything. And JP2 is like, give me the camera. You stand next to him. And
<That's laughs>
on the
awesome other
guy's camera, right? And so
were you in the picture or was it just your body?
Cut my head off.
Yeah.
It was before, believe it or not, it was before digital.
You had to wait and get it developed.
He had to go
home. He probably did it on purpose then. Yeah.
No, but the privilege I had is to be the fly on the wall.
Yeah.
That I would stand there when he either received people or when people went in and waited for him and I was with those people. I mean, we can go into more details on different people, but so I would see him at times just being there, either waiting or praying or talking at Mass. And then I would very often be with people who would wait to go see him because I would be the last person before they go in. And, you know, we would get a sign when he's ready. And so during that time, they're with me. So at least, you know, met some interesting people that
for
way.
Sure.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
How does one find their way out of the Swiss Guard? This is like the most mysterious thing in the world that I love.
Yeah. So I met the most beautiful young American woman you could meet. Her name is Michelle. And she studied and she did a year, not just a semester, but a year abroad. And I met her over a pot of fondue, believe it or not.
Nice.
Yeah, February 5th, that's our big anniversary that we always celebrate. And actually, during that time, so after JP2, I meet him and I go through this whole conversion process and I learn to pray the rosary and I'm like on rosary steroids. Like I pray the rosary because one of the things he said is, what do you have to lose? You're standing around all day. Like you can pray. And I'm like, oh, you got a point.
Got
very, very practical.
Very practical. And I said, yeah, but my grandma prays the rosary. I can't be, you know. And he says, oh, it's going to threaten your manly image or something. So then, you know, take one of these rosary rings and that's what I did. And I prayed the rosary 5-6 times a day, easy.
Wow.
And during that time, I very much came in tune with the Lord saying, Lord, I really want to do your will. I know you exist and I actually thought I was going to be a priest. I would go into the priesthood, logical thing.
Sure.
I'm like, I told him, I was like, I'm going to be a priest. And he's like, look, piano, piano.
Yeah.
Just because you meet the Lord doesn't mean you have to tell him what to do right away. Like, just sit at his feet for a bit and just enjoy that you found God. Just enjoy it. Just be with the Lord and then things will come about. Like, don't tell him what to do. I, of course, then go for, and somebody invited me and I met Michelle and I knew, I can say within the first 5 minutes, that I was so in tune, I knew within the first 5 minutes that I met my wife. Challenging part of it is I didn't speak a word of English.
Oh, no.
And she's American. We spoke French and Italian together. Yeah.
Sounds pretty awesome, actually. Yeah.
But that night, I met her, and I'm like, I know, Lord, this is what you have in store for me. So I want to encourage everybody. He introduced it to me as such that the rosary is my favorite prayer and you can't go wrong with it because it is the life of Christ and to Jesus through Mary. And it put me in a position of discernment that worked and I recommend it for others.
Okay, so you meet Michelle. You got to learn English at some point.
Yeah, it's a good motivator. Love is a good motivator. You learn real quick.
What do you do? You go and you tell... You put in more than 2 years. How long were you in the Swiss Guard?
No, I finished my 2 years, and I'm like, okay, I got to go. I got to pursue this girl.
Got to go see a girl.
And so I went to him. So he has this thing where there's you know, certain things are fixed. Like, for example, he will know I'm going to go into a room now and the guards who are leaving are there and they're going to say goodbye to me and I'm going to give him a gift, right? And so he comes in and he sees me in the room and he says, what? I thought we just met, you know, that Christmas Eve. And I'm like, no. And he says, what? Oh, Andreas, you're here. So you didn't like it after all, working here with me? I was like, no, you've been very good to me. I met my girlfriend because I introduced him and she got communion from him.
Oh, wow.
And I said, look, I'm not getting any younger. I need to move on. He didn't let me get away with that. He's like, look at it. I have these pictures of him like laughing out loud, saying, look at him. He's getting older. How old are you? I'm saying, I'm 22. And eventually he sort of, you know, again came over to me and he gave me a medal and he thanked me for his service. And he said, look, you found Jesus Christ here. I ask you now to bring Christ to wherever you go. Hmm. And I agreed to this, even though it took me a while to figure out how to do it.
All right, so you leave. You go to America?
America. I went to America.
America.
Yeah.
America.
America. And yeah. Then you don't have a boring career after that, do you? What did you get yourself into in America?
Yeah. I went to Boston, Massachusetts. And believe it or not, this college called Merrimack College in North End of Massachusetts gave me, without a word of English, a chance to be there for one semester, and they said, if you can swim, if you can learn English in a half a year and pass your classes, we'll give you a scholarship.
What?
Yeah. Wow. Talk about giving me a chance. I owe these people. It's the Augustinian Order.
Yeah.
Wonderful people. It's like Villanova. It's a sister school from that. I owe a lot to the Augustinians. They gave me this break. And then through there, I met some kids. One of the guys at Merrimack knew some kids over at MIT, and he told them about me by saying that I speak all these languages, because in Switzerland you speak all these languages. And,
right.
And they're like, well, we have, you know, we're starting this company and we have this company and you need to take care of all these weird Europeans who call us because they want our product and we can't deal with this. And so they hired me literally as a non-paid intern into this, because they just said, oh, we can't pay. We're just starting up. We'll give you some of our shares. And I'm like, what? And they say, we'll also pay for you to go visit these customers when you're off school. And I'm like, you pay for me to fly home? Yep. And I took the job.
It's a good deal.
It turned out, it was a software company, and I had never used a computer before. In 1989, that was. And this company turned out to be the company that brought the internet to the PC. I didn't know anything. It was they ported TCP/IP to the PC. So TCP/IP is the Unix Internet Protocol, and they made that understandable for the personal computer. This thing went up like a rocket ship.
I've heard of it.
It's just, it's called FTP software. So file transfer protocol. It's like Kleenex, you know, they say FTP.
Yeah, just FTP. Yeah.
We called it fun that pays, because to me, it was just, we all flourished, right?
Yeah.
It went off like a rocket ship. And I, still in school, started to lead the international. I did marketing. I would travel. And then as soon as I finished, we went public in 93. And as soon as which is when I finished college, starting older.
Yeah.
Because you know, I went into college starting at 22 when I left the Vatican. Sure. And then I moved to Europe with the company to start up all the subsidiary companies over there. And so once I finished college, I moved to Europe with the company, and I spread it there. It was an amazing time. But then once we were public, it sort of became about suits and just, the F went away.
Yeah.
And just the P took the front seat. And I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. They also started to, in my opinion, to not be honest about the product anymore, which was a general feeling around the old team, to say, look, if something sucks about the product, just say it and fix it in the future, right?
Yeah.
This is a trust issue, right? They're going to find it out anyway.
Sure.
So just say it. And they're like not doing that. And I'm like, I can't go with that. And I quit. And I found another couple, another team, also at MIT. You see, everybody knows everybody in this industry. So in 93, I left. In 95, I left. And I joined Dragon Systems, a husband and wife team, Jim and Janet, and they invented speech recognition.
Dragon Diction.
Dragon Dictate, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was a while ago, huh? And anyway, so they asked me, come and do here what you did at FTP. Like, bring this. I was always responsible for everything outside the United States.
Yeah.
So I did that for Dragon. And it was a rocket ship again.
Do you want to join the Beatitudes?
Now, there's a large chance that this was, there's a large probability that this was just chance at this point, okay? And we wanted to go public, and there were some issues, and then we sold the company at the end for $600 million. Mm-hmm. And I owned a chunk of that. But what happened, I don't know whether you want me to tell
the short
or long version.
Wherever the Holy Spirit leads you.
Yeah. See, the thing is what happens with this, I'm still the Catholic, I'm still, you know, having been converted by JP2 and going to Mass on Sunday, but what I started to lose, if you have success at that rate, is you're starting, it's not even just the money, but it's you're starting to think it's you.
Yeah.
Just like this now.
Yep.
Which it isn't, but you don't know that.
Sure.
And so when we sold the company, the next company, of course, tells me, blows smoke in my face and says, hey, Andreas, you helped build this and stay with us. We're going to get this to a whole other level. And the truth is, this is great technology. There's no reason. I mean, it's much larger today than it was when I left it. But I had a chance to sell pretty much everything and do it in a stock swap. And I decided not to because I felt like when you play poker, just put all the chips back in. It also looks good. You know, when you do that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fun moment.
Yeah, it's a fun moment. And Shelley said, no, look, who have you become? Like, we met with these two simple people, and we started with nothing back in Rome, and we made it, and we lived the American dream. And how much money do you need?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, a lot more than this, because it's not about the money anymore. It's like to win. And what I did is I'm like, okay, I'll sell a bit just to keep you happy, but my junk goes back in. And a month later, we learned that the company we sold to was fraudulent.
Hey, Beatitudes, it's Jeff here. When Nick and I set out and we started this company, Undivided Life, we decided to not use traditional healthcare, but we went with Solidarity Healthshare because we thought it was an affordable and ethical alternative that matched the needs of our business and our growing families. Since then, my family put Solidarity to the test. We've had pregnancies, babies, emergency room visits, even a brain surgery for one of my children, and Solidarity has been an incredible partner and has also had the cost and the ethical approach that we love. Here's a link for you to go check it out. learnmore.solidarityhealthshare.org/beatitudes. This is your chance to be in solidarity with the Shufflebine family.
The team at Aquinas Wealth Advisors believes that good values and good returns are not mutually exclusive. Using a tech-smart and morally sound approach, they provide investment alternatives that align with Catholic teachings without sacrificing returns. These days, faith-driven investors are finding it hard to know where their money is going. They have no visibility into what their dollars are supporting, but there's a better way. Thanks to the Faith and Finance Score from Aquinas Wealth Advisors, you can look into your current holdings to see what you're supporting and make a switch to an advisor that aligns with your values and gives power to your voice. Check out AquinasWealth.com today.
Hi, it's Paul Kolker from the Beatitudes here, and I just wanted to share with you guys that I also, outside of the show, perform improv comedy on a regular basis with a group called Divine Comedy. So what we do is we come up with everything on the spot, so whether you're looking for faith-filled, fun, family-friendly comedy for your youth night, or whether you're looking for clean comedy for your corporate event, Divine Comedy can perform for your group and even get you in on the action. So if you'd like to hire us to come out and perform for your next event, check out DivineComedyImprov.com. Divine Comedy, an inferno of fun.
Basic fraudulence, like literally just recognizing investments as sales and just making up the books and cooking the books. And and this is after we do due diligence for the sale of the company and all that. Like with Arthur Andersen, they went down for a reason.
I've heard of them.
Yep. And you pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for this, but it's worth nothing because it's like a legal advice. It's like, this is my opinion, but you're on your own, right? And so we lost a chunk of, a chunk of money, but we still had some because Michelle, because I placated my wife. Because
your wife is awesome.
Because she's awesome, and she did have the right insight. And it turned into this situation where people say, if you lose millions of dollars, what do you do? And my, and I always say, the first thing you do is you go into fetal position under your desk and feel really sorry about yourself.
Cry in the car on the drive home.
Yeah. Stuff like that. Yeah. Nothing you want to have on film. And we basically just didn't talk about it, she and I, just keeping things together. Stiff upper lip, kind of put your head down. You end up throwing bad money, good money after bad, trying to sue, you know, and
sure.
But there's nothing to be done.
Yep.
It's just losing money. But anyway, it turned around in a sense that we went to confession. The beauty of habits and the importance of habits, guys, is that even if, so we had this habit of saying, we go twice a year to confession, before Easter, before Christmas. Okay, you might say it's not a lot, but it is something, and it's twice a year, and it's a good habit. Because Christmas comes, and we go to that confession, and we always go together. And this is sort of the stuff you need to build in your life, because then when you know what hits the fan, you do that automatically without thinking about it, and then God can act.
Yeah.
So we go to this confession. She goes in first, ladies first, and she does, kind of doesn't come. I'm like, what is she doing? And I go in, and I told him, you know, my age, and and tell him I had some trouble. I just had this company. And he goes, that was your wife, wasn't it? And I'm like, yeah, how can you tell? Anyway, this priest ended up telling me that for my penance, that he made me recognize that I did mistreat my wife in this, that this was often God speaks through your wife. It's true, guys. And it's not, yeah, let me leave it at that, to contemplate that. And just when your wife says something, first think of that it often is the voice of reason. It's sometimes the voice of God. That whole thing of who have you become, what is important in our life and everything, those were true godly words, right, that I should have listened to. Anyway, he made me recognize that and then say, as your penance, as you drive home, before you get home, apologize to her. Like, really. Like, tell her what you did wrong and why that was wrong. And we only had like 10 minutes home, but I did it in the 10th minute.
If you wait till the last minute, it only takes a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As I parked the car, it's like, oh, and
by the way,
we sat there for like 3.5 hours. Whoa, I don't know, and cried. Good. And the power of the sacrament, that has an abide. It stays with you, and it softened our hearts and helped us, you know, a mix between the sacrament of our marriage and the sacrament of confession melded us together, that many marriages would have broken over this. But this grace of these sacraments, I cannot stress it enough, keep going. Sometimes you feel like, oh, I'm not worthy, or I can't do this, or it's embarrassing. Do it. Like, if you, this has such a power to bring good when you struggle in your marriage, when you struggle in your job. Go for this kind of stuff and say it, because Christ takes this on and carries the burden for you. And yeah, now we're happily married for 35 years.
Wow.
Amazing. Mm-hmm.
So Andreas, the first way I ever got to know who you were was the book you wrote, The Pope and the CEO, that it has so much to do with your journey as a business leader, but also the lessons you learned from JP2. Where in this arc of your story do you then decide you're going to write a book reflecting on the time you had before corporate America? Like, how did God and writing come in as you're talking
to
about
write this book,
yeah,
The Pope and the CEO?
Yeah.
It's too long a story, but the story is that, you know, during most of my time in corporate America, I didn't exactly lead with the Pope or my Christianity or my Catholicism. As a matter of fact, most people didn't know about this. It wasn't until there was a whole traumatic, you know, things were up and down. And I was actually on my way to, I ran a company that did emerging market business strategy. And we had an office in Afghanistan, in Kabul. And I was on the way there because the customer wasn't happy. And I was the CEO of the company, so I had to show up. But I couldn't travel at the time, long story, family stuff. And finally, I could travel, but only on this one day. And I left. It was a Saturday. I left in the morning, fly through Heathrow, had clearance to fly to through Abu Dhabi, and then in with a military plane to Kabul.
Wow.
And when I landed in London, it was about 8 o'clock in the evening local time. I got out of the airplane, and I see CNN all on with the Vatican on the images, and John Paul just died.
Yeah.
Now, I was so... We dealt with with health issues with Michelle, and we had a baby, and it was so chaotic the weeks before that. I wasn't really aware of what's going on because I focused so much. And here I am, and John Paul just died, and I land in Europe, and I'm like, well, I'm not Teresa of Lisieux, but I can tell you one thing: I see Providence. I recognize it when I see it.
Yeah.
I'm not here to go to Kabul. I'm here to go to Rome. Change my flight. Go to Rome. Within 24 hours, I see him. Like less than 24 hours, I see him and I get to pay my last respect.
Yeah.
And I see millions of people outside and saying, Lord, why? It struck me, like, why do I have the privilege to know the man of the century?
Yeah.
I'm a kid from a village with 400 people in it. Come here, give me a break. And that's one of the few times I heard God audibly say, you're welcome. Like, it really hit me because I'm kneeling there crying, why me, why me? And it's like, well, first of all, you're welcome. And I said, okay, thank you, thank you, thank you. And the next thought was, so what are you going to do about it? So if you're so thankful that you know this man and the impact he had in his on your life, what are you going to do about it? And then and there I promised God that nobody will ever meet me again without thinking of John Paul II and knowing that I talk about him. And I resolved to write that book, and that's the result of that is the Pope and the CEO.
Wow.
That's amazing.
No, yeah. It was the overflow of this overwhelming gratitude in that moment. Gosh, yeah, that's powerful.
Not the only book you've written. We have over Paul's shoulder and your shoulder, The Art of Principled Entrepreneurship. Tell us.
That is... Perfect custom, perfect product place.
Yeah, look, you can see straight into it. It's the one right next to the blue one. Yep, right there.
I did not pay for that.
That's been there in every episode.
I'm here for a reason.
That's right. You said, wait, first of all, read that book. But you said right before going on air, you have a new favorite business book. But then you said, hold on, what is it?
It's called Unreasonable Hospitality.
Ooh.
Yeah, by Will Guderis.
Okay.
I'm telling you. That guy is an anonymous Catholic. Like, everything he does,
those people.
Once you go through this, this guy's pregnant with Catholicism. It's like he should just get with it.
Yeah.
No, it's deeply person-centered business. Guderis is the guy who built the top restaurant in the world. Mm. Like, it's something in New York. I don't even know the name of it. But the way he does it is to put the customer and the employee in the center and say, I'm going to be unreasonably good with and to you. To, like, over-deliver.
Yep.
To make it so... And he so focuses on human dignity that I find this the most... I guarantee you it's the best business book I've read in over 10 years. And it's my number one gifted book.
Yeah, people miss that. I guarantee it's the same one from the book you and I read. We read about that. I just haven't read his book yet. Mm-hmm. But this concept that, like, love of the human person and the sacrificial moments of our life are actually, like, the greatest strategic advantage if you're trying to grow.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If you want to be selfish for a second, be unselfish and it'll come back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's this beautiful thing that it's in giving that we receive. So business has this fundamental approach. My favorite business question is, how may I help you? Because when you say, how may I help you, you bring in that hospitality. Mm. And what he wants to do is be unreasonable about it, to exceed your expectations with how I'm going to help you with my talents. So I'm going to use my God-given talents to help you in a way to create value. And of course, the difference between a hobby and a business is that in the business, the way I help you is creates more value for you than it costs me to make. And then that's, of course, the new money, the profit in on top of it. But when you're doing this well, you see the unreasonableness of it is by so far exceeding the person's expectation, you create these super fans that keep coming back. Mm-hmm. And it, of course, makes your business grow. And the fact that you're giving your employees the power to exceed people's expectations makes them flourish. Mm. Because it makes them, imagine how much you like it if somebody calls and says, this is the best service I've ever got, or the best product I've ever got. That creates a team and a company where it's worth more than the sum of its parts.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know Andreas Widmer, I'm getting Swiss
with
you.
There.
Yeah, I'm like a Swiss Army Jeff. Mm-hmm. But so if you don't know this man, you teach entrepreneurship. You lead the Entrepreneurship Center at the Catholic University of America. Yep. So for you to recommend a business book, I'm going to say is a high recommendation for a business book.
You will not be disappointed. I don't like theory books. I know theory and so on, but I like a book that says, okay, what are we going to do this afternoon?
Yeah.
Right? And this book, even though it's about hospitality and a restaurant, I guarantee you, just for you, it will leave you with a to-do item and inspiration about what you're going to do in your business. This is really brilliant.
All right. So here's the deal. You have other obligations today. I understand that other people got on your calendar after you flew down here for the show. I don't want to miss out on an opportunity, though, to let everybody know about something really special that happened to you recently. You have a lapel pin right now here.
Wow.
It's the red pin right there. Talk to us about the very special surprise that happened to you just a few weeks ago in January.
Yeah, so Commander of the Guards is an old friend of mine. We served together 30 years ago. His name is Christopher Graf. He made every rank in the Swiss Guards. He's the only guy ever to actually do everything.
Every one of them.
Every one of them, yeah. He started, he came in one recruit school behind me, and let's just say he was a little more successful as a guard than I was. I won't challenge him. No, and so he invited me. So I have to say, I've stayed involved in the Swiss Guards. It's sort of my avocation. I helped them a bit, and I go back every year, and I helped them in the U.S., do some fundraising and just helping them. And he invited me to go to Rome, and he said, listen, in January, on the birthday of the Swiss Guards, I'd like you to be here. I'm like, dude, I'm teaching in January. And he says, come on, just come for a weekend. It's on Saturday, or it's a Monday, he said. And I'm like, well, I usually go in May. And he says, no, this time I want you to come now and bring your wife. And I'm like, what's going on? But don't ask. If the commander of the Swiss Guard tells you, be here, bring your wife, maybe you should do it. Of course I did. And so I get there, and there's this beautiful, it's an internal holiday. It's the founding of the Swiss Guards, 1506, January 22nd, I think, where the first 400 Swiss Guards came from Switzerland to Julius II. And that's really our birthday celebration. And we do that privately inside. But the whole corps is there, everybody in the uniforms. We have a mass. It's beautiful. Everybody's dressed up and so on. And I got this position of honor, and I'm like, that's very nice. I'm happy to be here. But then everybody in the barracks, in the courtyard of the barracks, they're standing all in line in attention, and he calls my name. And I'm like, what? So I walk forward and in front of him, and he says, I'm happy to tell you that the Pope has made you a knight of one of his personal knighthoods, the knighthood of Saint Sylvester, which is one of the knighthoods that you get from the Pope himself. And it's this little thing here, and I'm super proud of it, humbled but proud.
Yeah.
Because this is my, this is my tribe recognizing me.
Yes.
I really care. And it's just full of gratitude. Like, God gave me this beautiful, gave me this beautiful consolation, like of saying, attaboy. Like, I got an attaboy from God.
Well, normally wouldn't that be reserved for people that have stayed guard and have gone through the ranks? Yeah.
Usually you have to be in active duty as an officer for 15 years to do this. I'm a private, so as you know.
But no longer, because now you're sir, right? Do we call you sir?
Yeah.
Sir?
Cavaliere.
Cavaliere.
Cavaliere. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, one with a horse. Cavaliere.
Can you, can we say, you? I believe that qualifies you to be nobility.
I would hope so.
It is. We know. Okay. So you're the first, maybe of many, but you're the first Vatican nobility to show up to the tiny table.
One in a row of people who are going to show up.
One in a row.
One in a row.
A long line of people waiting. So. No, I've been so grateful for this. And yeah, it means a lot to me to receive this kind of honor.
It's beautiful.
Tickled. Yeah, yeah.
Can I maybe set you up for closing remarks so we can get you onto your next appointment?
Yeah.
You have spent a great deal of time with a modern saint. With someone that we all talk about in his saintly greatness and the every word. I mean, just being a modern day Catholic, it's like every word out of JP2's mouth we like hold on to.
Yeah.
Can you talk about this path that we're called, that we're all called to sainthood? Like, what's your view of this, having been not just you shook a hand of a Mother Teresa, you were alongside this saint.
Mm.
And how does that play into you and the leadership and the way in which you try to bring other people along?
Jeff, I'm glad you're asking me this, because on a very serious note, I think it's dangerous to hold JP2 up too much on a pedestal. It would be against his will, because what I came away with and learned from him is that being a saint is for every one of us. Like, you want to get into heaven, you better be a saint. Now, sainthood is, of course, something that ends up being up to God's grace and all that, but it has to do with our cooperation with that grace. John Paul would say that you have everything you need right now to become a saint. You're a saint at the end of your life, therefore you have to go through this. The church gives you all the sacraments. But what you should do is to say, what does Saint Andreas or what does Saint Jeff look like? And use all the images that John Paul provided for the other saints. Read the lives of the saints and be inspired to see how they dealt with their talents, non-talent, challenges, opportunities, and all that kind of stuff. To say, how am I going to create sainthood with what I have? Not, oh, he has what I don't have and therefore I can't go there or something. But with the lot you have everything to become a saint. And John Paul's call was, don't be afraid. Just bend it together and commit every day anew to becoming that saint. Fall in love with the vision of who you are as a saint and then apply your will to pursue it.
I love this.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Well, we're going to finish on something where we just give you a pair of socks for being an incredible part of our show. We're giving you some socks from sockreligious.com of the Pope Mobile. Do you already have these?
I came for that.
Yeah.
No, I have this. I have the Swiss Guard socks.
I knew you would. That's why we didn't pull that one out. But you don't have Pope Mobile. That's the Pope Mobile throughout the year. So maybe you'll even recognize some that you jogged next to.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it, guys.
You're an inspiration to us, and I know a lot of people are getting a chance to hear from you both in Dallas and throughout the world, and if there's ever a chance to give out knighthood on the Beatitudes, just consider yourself the running.
It will be, and I will advocate for you in the Vatican, personally. I'm a huge fan, guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks. No, it's been a blessing getting to know you over the last year, but the best is yet to come, and you know what that means.
Yes.
It's not just about our time here. It's our time in the great beyond. So thanks for the inspiration. Gentlemen, what a blessing. This is a different
incredible.
Show than we've ever done before.
You have been unreasonably hospitable with us.
Praise God.
Amen.
Thank you. And that's what a great book to just like buy 37 copies of and give to somebody for no reason.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, they came and ask you why you did it.
What's this for? Look at it.
Read the title.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right, everybody. We'll see y'all out there in the world of hospitality whenever we are living and leading others in the name of Christ. And for the rest of you, we will
see you in the Eucharist.
God bless.
Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to join us at our undersized table, subscribe to the video version of the show on YouTube by typing at, that's the symbol at, so shift and 2 on your keyboard, at the_Beatitudes on YouTube. We'll see you there.
This podcast is part of the Spoke Street Network. For more great podcasts, visit SpokeStreet.com.